This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, good to be with you on a Friday. Payne and Pendergast. 20 minutes from now, we will do five reasons I hate you. Golden State Warriors, maybe the easiest one ever to put together. And if you want to send in some now, feel free to 713-572-4610. So, Seth, I was going and finding some audio last night for some other segment we were doing today. And one of the things that popped up, you know, that got curated to me by the algorithm was the night of the draft 2 years ago in 2023 that 10-minute sequence where C.J. Stroud had just been selected by the Texans, and then all of a sudden the logo on the screen on the NFL Network for the third pick goes from a Cardinal and goes, whoop, and flips over to a Texan.
Yeah.
Which was badass if you were at the draft party. Like
that I was at the draft party, and it was crazy.
It was crazy, yeah. And I'm like, well, I want to watch this. I want to watch this again. I mean, Will Anderson Jr. is my favorite Houston Texan right now, and I want to watch how this came to be. For the 100th time, I've gone back and rewatched Draft Night 2023 so many times, given how it's worked out for this team. But this is the NFL Network version of it, and this is what's interesting about this, is that Daniel Jeremiah, who had called that trade in the mock draft the day before, is one of the guys on the set there. He's, you know, it's Rich Eisen, it's Charles Davis, Joel Klatt, and Daniel Jeremiah on the set there. This was the trade getting announced by Ian Rappaport, actually. They brought Ian Rappaport and said, Ian, you got big news. Tell us.
There's the Cardinals brass with 90 seconds. Ian, you've got big news?
News, a big-time trade. Sources say that the Houston Texans are trading up to number 3 with the Arizona Cardinals. So the Houston Texans, who just shocked all of us and took C.J. Stroud at 2, are back up again, potentially to take the top defensive player on the board. Absolutely wild. Nick Caserio is stunning us and wheeling and dealing.
So you can see they are celebrating, and it does appear that the Houston Texans using the 12th overall pick they received from Cleveland in the Deshaun Watson trade.
Yeah, and that was, if you remember that visual, Seth, like that was Nick on the phone banging his fist on the table, slamming the phone down in joy. You know, if you didn't know, if you had no context for what just happened, you would have thought Nick was pissed off. Looking
that's a good point.
Phone down,
it was
really, really cool. So the trade gets executed, and then the folks on the set there, again, Daniel Jeremiah was the one draft expert who called his shot with that trade. Texans from 12 up to 3 to draft Will Anderson Jr. His fellow cohorts there on the set gave him his props.
Did they pull off the Stroud Will Anderson double dip?
Hold on a second. Listen, did we hear about this last night?
Yes, we did.
Someone say that last night?
Draft. His grin.
This team has 12 picks in this draft. They have 11 picks in the next draft. They've got a new head coach. They've got an opportunity with the assets they have to get the offensive identity of their team going forward and the defensive identity of their team going forward. Arizona's been shouting from the rooftops they want to get out, and the Texans have more ammunition than anybody else to get up. It just made so much sense. They pulled it off.
And that's exactly, like, it is wild to go back and listen on draft night, Seth, to hear Daniel Jeremiah say they've got a chance to get their identity on offense and a chance to get their identity on defense, and that's exactly how it's played out over these 2 years.
Yeah,
that's who those two guys have been for this
team.
It
really is. Okay, so if you go to Draft Day, the movie, where people were kind of blown away by some of the trades in that movie and thought they were unrealistic or what have you, when you use the Jimmy Johnson points system, in that movie, when the Browns, to move from 7-1, trade their current first-round pick and then two future first-round picks, it works out to about – they overpaid by about one full first-round pick for that.
Yeah.
Everything gets screwed up when you talk about quarterbacks and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Texans trade up for the number 3 overall pick was pretty damn aggressive. I mean, I almost feel like if that was put – if they had put that in the movie Trade Day, people would be looking at that as like, well, no, I mean, that's like a Julio Jones-type trade. Nobody's going to do that for a defensive end. It would have been, if it hadn't worked out, if Will Anderson was a bust, people would be lambasting that as one of the dumbest trades ever. Not just because of the player selected, but because it was a very, very aggressive trade.
Yeah.
So it was a really gutsy move by the Texans that now, in hindsight, is 100% worth it. I don't think you can really overstate how aggressive a trade it was.
It was an aggressive trade, and the biggest criticism of that trade, if I recall, because the Texans gave up their second-round pick, which was top of the second round. It was the 33rd overall pick, and then they gave up the next year's first and third. And if you remember, the thing that we didn't know at first was which first-round pick in 2024 that they gave up, because they still had one more first-rounder left from the Deshaun Watson trade in 2024, and everybody's going, well, they must have given up the Cleveland pick because Cleveland's better than the Texans. Why would you give up the first-round pick that's yours? The Texans are going to be a top-5 pick again next year because they stink. Well, they gave up their pick, which turned out to be the right play. They were better than the Browns, you know, in the 2023 season. The Browns' first-round pick actually ended up being the better of those two picks. The trade revisited here. Someone put this graphic out. The picks have all been used on the Will Anderson trade. And at the end of the day, the Texans received Will Anderson Jr., and then one of the picks they got back in that deal was a fourth rounder in 2023 that eventually they used to get Kalen Bullock in 2024. Like, you know, you do a couple more moves with that pick and you wind up. So they essentially got Will Anderson Jr. and Kalen Bullock. The Cardinals ended up using all those picks. They wound up with Paris Johnson, the offensive tackle, who's been good for them at Ohio State. Not been Will Anderson, but he's been good. And then a bunch of dudes who are either injured or haven't played. You know, B.J. Ojulari is who they used the 33rd overall pick on in that draft in 2023. He tore his ACL last year. Garrett Williams, first-round pick in 2024 that they got for that, they used for Darius Robinson, who didn't get on the field last year, and then Elijah Jones. Just based on all the players that ended up getting picked with that draft capital, the Texans win that trade in a landslide.
Well, no, the most fun part about that entire Will Anderson trade was everybody afterwards was saying, the Texans, everybody knows. Remember, that was what they say. Everybody knows the Texans are going to be the worst team in the league next year. And they would state it like it was a mathematical fact.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it made it even worse. At the time, the Texans basically, like the way it graded, if you wanted, without saying the actual points, it was like the Cardinals had gotten an extra 24th overall pick by making that deal. The way they graded, if you look at it, is okay if the Texans pick ended up being a mid-round pick or whatever. Whereas that Bo Callahan trade in Draft Day was, I think, the equivalent of a 17th overall pick. Like, this was a Draft Day Sonny Weaver trading for Bo Callahan type of pick. That's how much of an overpay
based
it was.
On the point system.
Based on the point system that approached that.
Here's what the pick sounded like 2 years ago.
We're just rent payers in the Texans' world at present.
The Arizona Cardinals have traded the third pick to the Houston Texans. With the third pick in the 2023 NFL Draft, the Houston Texans select Will Anderson Jr., linebacker, Alabama.
And we're coming off of a year. We had Sauce Gardner on the pregame. Sauce Gardner and Garrett Wilson were offensive, defensive rookies of the year. Two top 10 picks who have given your Jets a lot of hope. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers adds to that. They're candidates in Houston to have offensive, defensive rookie of the year this coming season.
DJ called his shot again, man. Not just Will Anderson. Not just the Texans are going to trade up and get Will Anderson, which happened. He was saying as Will's strolling out there to the stage that the Texans could have the offensive and defensive rookies of the year, which they did. They did.
He didn't call attention to the fact that he had called that trade, right?
No, that was Charles Davis, the head. It was the one who said, hey, DJ, you know, look at you, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if Daniel Jeremiah has always kind of winked or anything or said that he had some inside information on why he called that shot and in his mock draft. That was a weird thing to be able to call without inside information.
That was answers to the test. That was like answers to the test kind of stuff.
Which honestly, it gives him that much more value as a pre-draft discussion dude because you know that he is getting information from teams and that. Then when he's, you know, he's not going to nail all his mock draft selections or anything, but a lot of things he's saying about the prospects and how teams feel about the prospects, I very much trust Daniel Jeremiah.
I do too, and he is stating with emphasis this week that it's Tyler Booker and Kelvin Banks Jr. that the Texans really, really want. So take that for what it's worth. Here was Will Anderson Jr.'s interview with Melissa Stark up on stage right after he became a Houston Texan.
They trade up to get you. You're the first defensive player taken off the board. What does that say about what the Texans think about you?
Man, it means everything. You know, everybody don't know how much hard work goes into this, man. The sacrifices I made, the hard work, the dedication, everything that goes into this. They just see what happened on Saturday. But the process, man, I'm just so blessed and favored by God.
And we just talked to your new quarterback, the leader on offense. You're going to be the leader on defense. Look at this smile. I love it. What are you bringing? What are fans getting in you?
They're just getting a complete player, complete person, high character player, but also a good player. You know what I'm saying? It's going to go out there, do his job every snap, relentless motor, high mindset, good motivation, good energy on the team, jumping up and down. And that's what I'm all about. And I'm ready.
I don't even have to say it, but go get it.
Go get it. Let's go.
I love my favorite part of that. They're getting a good player. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, yes, I know exactly what you're saying. You are a very good player, Will Anderson. Yes.
Yeah, that was cool too. That weekend was fun because we got so many opportunities to see Will Anderson and CJ Stroud had their press conference together. And we had all the footage of them hanging out together and everything behind the scenes. And they had already known each other, but you could see how well they got along. That was really cool. That was cool. That whole first year was fun because Will Anderson's family and CJ Stroud's family seemed to be just like wide-eyed as anybody else and just how cool it is. It felt like very much a changing of the guard in a good way because it was just there was a certain level of almost collegiate enthusiasm about the team that you don't see in the NFL a lot.
Yeah.
Between D'Amico's personality and then those two guys, you know, still at a point where they didn't know what they didn't know about the dark side of the NFL. they hadn't seen various friends get cut or traded or injured or whatever, but it was a fun year.
It was one of the greatest nights of being a Texan fan. You know, I've been back here since 2007. I wasn't here for the part of the franchise that you were on the team, Seth. I moved back here in 2007. For my money, since moving back here, that was one of the greatest nights as a Texan fan. It wasn't even a game. It was just something where you felt like, oh, okay, between that and hiring D'Amico 2 months before that, it feels like, all right, now we're rolling here. And if someone told you that night they'd have won two AFC South championships with 10-7 records the first 2 years, I would have signed up for that night. And that's what we've gotten those first 2 years. I do have a bit of PTSD from that night because when they drafted CJ, we were at the party. The party, for people who don't remember or weren't there, it was at Miller Outdoor Theater. And you've got that huge grass amphitheater that leads into a covered actual theater area with seats, and nobody's sitting down after the CJ Stroud pick. So I'm walking down there to go celebrate with Amy and her parents, who were sitting down in like the second row down there near the stage. And I'm down there celebrating with them and hugging and high-fiving. You know, Texan fans are high-fiving, you know, like as I'm walking down there, you know, you see familiar faces and it's really cool. And I get down there, and as I'm celebrating with Amy's family, Seth, Amy's mom looks at me, who's just a sweetheart. She looks up at me and she says, "The Texans are picking third." And I said, no, they just picked second. And I'm really mansplaining to her as well. I'm like, no, they just picked second, JoLynn. They're not picking third. No, I think they're picking third. And I said, no, they just picked CJ Stroud with the second pick. She goes, I'm looking at my phone and it says they're picking third. And I have to do this like a third time. And then I look up at the screen, and the Texans, the Cardinals logo flips and turns into a Texans logo. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to need to get her something really nice for Christmas this year. After they really are picking third. She was right. I was wrong. She broke that news to me. She was basically the Adam Schefter of our group right there, that the Texans were picking third. I felt horrible. But then they picked Will Anderson, and I felt better again. I forgot about the whole thing. So that was good.
I was during the break, I was trying to figure out like exactly what a fair trade would be for the Texans to trade up with the Cardinals again, and it's to get to 16th overall.
Okay,
and it's pricey. I'm not good enough on the trade calculator yet to really get a feel for it.
That's the range you might have to move up into if you really like Tyler Booker and Kelvin Banks Jr. That is a relevant. And we'll probably talk more. We'll talk a ton about that next week, obviously. Like, okay, if they're going to maneuver to these parts, if they're going to look to trade back, what do fair deals look like? The Texans were ironically picking.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
25th in the draft that they drafted Deshaun Watson. They moved up from 25th. To 12th in that draft and gave Cleveland their next year's first round pick. You know, that and I think about that, like they were doing that for a quarterback. Is there any player that's hovering around in the top 10 that if they slipped to 12, you would give up a first round pick for if you were you'd give up next year's first to go up and get? Because you're obviously not going to move up and get a quarterback. You've got CJ Stroud. And the only one I can think of, like if Tyler Warren were sitting there and you really wanted a tight end, you really felt like that would add an element to this offense. You know, Nick Caley, yeah, tight ends coach, getting the best tight end in this draft. Would you give up your one next year, which you think is going to be in the 20s at worst somewhere, to move up and get Tyler Warren? That's an interesting one to me. You know, stuff like that. We'll talk a lot about stuff like that next week. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, that was fun for me. I liked reliving that Will Anderson, the Will Anderson pick from last year. But this will be more fun. 5 Reasons I Hate You. Warriors edition. Start sending them in now. We've got people sending them in already. Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. I hate Steph's half-court shots that go viral before the games. Yeah, stuff like that. Why we hate the Warriors. 5 Reasons. That's coming up next. All right, let's do this. 5 Reasons I Hate You, Golden State Warriors. We're already got people sending in some. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. I hate the Warriors for choking away a 3-1 lead and giving LeBron an extra championship. That's next level hate right there. That's hatred of the Warriors because you hate LeBron. I like it. All right, good. People got their hate on. Let's do this. Number 5, Steve Kerr, professional whiner. Here's Steve Kerr right before the postseason began, preemptively whining about the refs not calling grabbing Steph Curry.
You know, the league's changed quite a bit this year with the physicality. And one way I'm seeing it manifest itself on tape is that everyone's allowed to just grab and hold Steph. Even when he's making a back cut, I'm seeing people grab his arm. So the freedom of movement stuff is kind of out the window, and we have to adapt to that. So it's harder to get him the ball in our off-ball stuff than it used to be. So we just have to adapt.
Yeah, it's always him whining about something. Oh, like, hey, why come we can't have we run every moving screen that we want anymore? And they're like, wait, people are allowed to actually be physical with Steph Curry. The scheduling is so hard.
Yes.
I can't believe we have to fly in a private jet overnight. Oh, my back hurts.
Enough. He's whining about the 82-game schedule earlier this week. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Not
to mention he loves to take pot shots at the NFL out of nowhere.
Does he really?
Oh, the NFL. Yeah, oh. Just typical of them.
He's the worst. He is reason number five to hate the Golden State. And these are in no particular order because I hate all these guys. Draymond Green, number four, professional nut kicker. Especially on Steven Adams for some reason. Boy, there's like a sizzle reel out there of Draymond Green just agitating Steven Adams with multiple kicks to the junk, dragging him to the floor. We talk about Draymond Green versus Dylan Brooks. I mean, the Draymond Green versus Steven Adams dynamic. And Fred VanVleet was actually on Draymond's podcast this week. So I guess they put their weapons down long enough to have a cordial conversation on there. Except that Fred VanVleet, who went on the podcast and basically said, "Hey, man, why are you kicking my dude in the nuts all the time?"
Me and Steven Adams don't really get into it much, man. I think there's a mutual respect.
Didn't you kick my man's in the nuts, man?
Listen, number one, I was selling a car. I got it.
You kicked my dog in the nuts, man.
You kicked my dog in the nuts, man.
Yeah. They weren't in person. It's one of the weirdest things in all of sports. My entire life was just that Draymond Green has this thing of kicking dudes in the nards.
Yeah, man.
And yet also wants to be, and has been one of the league's best defenders for a long time. He plays a particularly physical style of basketball. I give him all the credit for that. But there's just, I feel like society loses something when all of a sudden your signature move is the nut kick.
Yeah.
In which he totally was. He said, and he never even owns up to it. He totally kicked Steven Adams in the nards there.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, it was just
multiple times.
With the shin.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he caught the laces on the nether regions. He got so deep in it that it was his shin.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was all up in there. Yeah.
America can't have this. America can't have basically Bobby Hill as the emblem of tough defense in the NBA.
Yeah. And you know what?
Let go of my purse, Steven Adams. I don't know you.
Here's the thing, too, about it, Seth, and this is where the contrast of Steve Kerr, who we just talked about him a minute ago, whiner, versus Ime Udoka. Anytime you bring up Draymond to Ime Udoka, Ime Udoka really likes Draymond Green. To the point where I think Draymond might wind up a Rocket at some point. Like, he loves what Draymond brings. He doesn't mind that Draymond brings that agitating. After that game a few weeks ago where Draymond just couldn't control himself, he's screaming in guys' ears that are shooting free throws. He's trying like hell to get a second technical, and they won't give it to him. Yeah. After the game, Ime Udoka's like, "You know, I kind of like what Draymond brings to the table." And I just, he was very complimentary of Draymond.
So, I wonder if... I wonder what, though, there's one thing where you like what he brings to the table versus do you want him on your team? Because we've seen Steve Kerr get very frustrated with Draymond Green at times. There was that one hot mic moment or lip-reading moment where he said he's just always a pain in the ass or something to that effect.
I think I feel like Ime's got a higher threshold for Draymond-type behavior than Steve Kerr might.
Well, he's got a higher threshold for it, but it's also been, with the Warriors, it was just the right blend of personalities where maybe it was okay and it worked. And you could handle it. I guess it's different when it's somebody coming onto your team and they're not growing old together. It's that Draymond Green is one of the old guys and then you've got these other young guys. It would be interesting. Draymond and Dylan Brooks in the same locker room.
They'd get along fine, I think.
They get along fine most of the time.
Yeah.
The thing about guys like Draymond is that he gets along fine with lots of people for most of the time.
Yeah.
It's the moments when they don't get along.
Right.
Or that it gets interesting.
All right, let's get to these other three reasons we hate the Golden State Warriors. Five reasons I hate you. Number three, Steph Curry's wife had the unmitigated gall to try to open up a fancy barbecue restaurant in Houston with fancy things on it. On the menu.
International Smoke.
Yes. Opened on July 5th, 2018, which is just a couple of weeks after the Warriors beat the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals in excruciating fashion. And it closed, good for you, Houston, it closed 17 months later, December 11th, 2019. Out of nowhere. I went and looked up the articles. Out of nowhere, International Smoke closes. Good. Man, we like our brisket. We like our ribs. We like our barbecue being barbecue. I look at the menu for this place, and it's the fancy schmanciest quote unquote barbecue place ever.
I just love to know the business advisor that thought this was a good idea at all, because this is at the heyday of people in Houston hating the Warriors and Steph Curry. And you might say, well, yeah, but look, the percentage. Houston's a big city, and there's so many non-basketball fans that what does that even matter?
Yeah.
It matters because you know what matters these days? Yelp reviews and Google reviews and everything else like that. I was hoping that there it would still be listed on Yelp, but it's not.
No.
At least as far as I could find.
Yeah. Yeah, just bad advice. Almost a slap in the face to have the hubris to think you could open up a barbecue place, and not even a good one, here in Houston. People texting in there, hey, hate Steph Curry's mouthpiece. Yeah, stuff like that. That's a good one. Number two, Jimmy Butler. Getting all this love now. Jimmy Butler this, Jimmy Butler that. Seth, you pointed out, playoff Jimmy. Play in Jimmy the other night. He basically stopped showing up for a job for which he was getting paid $49 million a year.
Yeah.
He just stopped showing up. He just wouldn't show up at practice and would leave shoot around and then get suspended. And
he did exactly what he actually did a much worse version of what the Tennessee quarterback did, which is just flat out like, you know what? Actually, no, I don't want to play here anymore at a very critical time.
Yeah,
in this
not likable.
Yeah.
Not likable at all.
And he pulled a James Harden. He just flat out, he quiet quit on the job. Well, James Harden at least had the good sense to show up and not play, whereas Jimmy Butler just didn't show up at all and not play.
James played. Yeah. He was just 80 pounds overweight.
He was on the court.
He literally played, but he functionally did not. So Jimmy Butler, that's not a likable thing, man. Like, that's not something the average everyday man can relate to. The Rockets are a team whose two-guard, you have to take the jaws of life to get him out of the lineup in Jalen Green. Played 186 straight games. He shows up for his job. All right.
Jimmy Butler does show up in the playoffs. That's the big thing there. All that stuff. It's a good reason to hate him and yet also recognize that. Yep. He's fully engaged Jimmy Butler right this moment.
Let's go.
Until somebody in Houston wheedles his way into Jimmy Butler's brain and finds him a reason to be disgruntled. I feel he's underpaid. I feel like he's not getting the respect he deserves.
Jimmy,
that's what I'd
listening?
Be telling him.
Yeah. All right, last one. Number one reason to hate the Golden State Warriors, the past. Four playoff series against Golden State from 2015 to 2019. Four infuriating eliminations. The only year between 2015 and 2019 where the Rockets didn't get eliminated by the Warriors was 2017, and that was when they got blown out by the Spurs by 40 points in an elimination game, in which James Harden took two shots in the first half. James Harden staged a protest in an elimination game of a playoff series. The other four series in which they got eliminated in that time were all at the hands of the Warriors. 2015, Western Conference Finals. They went down in five games, the Rockets did. That was our first taste of bad elimination game, James Harden. 2 of 11 with 12 turnovers in the closeout game of that series. 2016 was the year the Rockets that season needed to end. They were the 8th seed. James and Dwight hated each other. Those were the final games of the Dwight Howard era. That was the first round of the playoffs. They got eliminated in 5. In 2018, probably the one that's most painful, that was the Chris Paul hamstring Game 5 series, where in Game 7, the Rockets lose because they couldn't make a 3. They shot 7 of 44 from 3, and they missed 27 straight 3-pointers and still only lost by 9. In a game where if they win that game, they, you know, who knows, maybe they win an NBA championship. And then finally, in 2019, the Rockets lose in the second round. Kevin Durant tears his Achilles in Game 5, and the Rockets go on to lose in 6 games. That was the final game of the Chris Paul era, and that was the game after which Tillman Fertitta said, we needed to step on their throats.
Yes.
We needed to step on their throats and kill them.
Yes.
Yeah, well, he's right.
Yes.
And now we've got a chance. Now we've got throat steppers on this team now, Seth. I feel like this is a much more throat steppier team here in 2025 than the one Tillman was the owner and steward of back in 2019.
That previous version of the Rockets was only good at kicking homeless men in the Pacific Northwest. This is a different. They'll actually step on the throats of actual basketball players.
Actual NBA players. Text message Ross Tucker loved Aisha Curry's barbecue place, told everyone who'd listen not to go there.
Yeah.
Okay, you need to listen to the show to get that joke. Oh, that's funny. I say this with the deepest depths of my soul. F Draymond Green. That's a text message. Yeah. That's this, of all the opponents that they could have played, there were a lot of sizzly opponents down the stretch. Down the stretch, there was five or six teams the Rockets could have ended up playing in the first round of the playoffs until the standing sorted itself out. In retrospect, this is the one that involves the most just sheer sports fan hate.
If Draymond Green opens a restaurant, I just please do not have corn on the cob on the menu, because I can't watch that. I can't watch Draymond Green eating corn on the cob. I might never be able to eat again.
No.
So that's like, you cannot. At a barbecue, sometimes, you know, they like giving you a little corn on the cob. Like, just please leave that off the menu.
Thank you. Yes. Yes. Boy, a lot of texts rolling in about that. A lot of texts rolling in on the segment we did on the Will Anderson Jr. trade up a couple of years ago. People enjoyed reliving that. The feeling of hope. Yeah, that's what it is, man. All right, coming up next, Aaron Rodgers has spoken. What's he feeling on retirement and the detailed story of his visit to the Jets? Does this paint Aaron Rodgers in a sympathetic light? We will see. We'll do that coming up next. All right, top of the hour, Take a Mania. This week, the contenders will try to take down the new champ from last week, Stephen A. Smith and his Russell Westbrook tale. Westbrook is going to be the key to a run to the finals for the Denver Nuggets. We'll replay that take and play a few contenders, and we will decide if there will be a new champion in our weekly Take a Mania on Friday. Here was Aaron Rodgers yesterday. He was back on the Pat McAfee show for the first time in a few months. And he's still out there. You know, the Steelers are a team that he's been linked to. He went and visited the Steelers. Steelers have a quarterback issue right now. Pat McAfee asking Aaron Rodgers, where are you at with everything right now?
From the jump, it's, I'm in a different phase of my life. I'm 41 years old. I'm in a serious relationship. I have off the field stuff going on that requires my attention. I have personal commitments I made, not knowing what my future was going to look like after last year, that are important to me. And I have, a couple of people in my inner circle who are really battling some difficult stuff. So I have a lot of things that are taking my attention and have, beginning in really January, away from football. That's been where I've been focusing most of my attention on. To make a commitment to a team is a big thing, whether you're a first-year player or a 20-year vet.
Okay.
Yeah, this is where, like, honestly, whether you love or hate Aaron Rodgers or anything else, like, you have to acknowledge he's 41 years old, and physically he's not going to be the same guy that he was when he was younger. But, man, if you were 28 years old and super, super driven to win a Super Bowl, this is something that 28-year-old quarterbacks deal with all the time when people in their inner circle are dealing with something difficult. And they figure out a way to handle everything in their life and just still be focused on winning football games.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Aaron Rodgers is simply at a point in his life, and has been for a couple of years now, where, hey, he wants to broaden his horizons. Like, okay, football might not be, maybe, he's got a better perspective on life than he used to. That's great for him personally, if he can just, maybe work on personal stuff. But it's not the best thing for a football team that needs a quarterback to drive a turnaround or to take them to the next level. If I were the biggest Aaron Rodgers fan in the world, I think I might hear that. And I think immediately, like Tom Brady when he was going through a divorce and missed chunks of a training camp and just wasn't the same guy that year. That's what happens when guys get in their 40s and they start not necessarily prioritizing football the way they used to.
If he comes back, the biggest reason might be the paycheck.
I don't know about that. I think, because he said that he'll play for $10 million.
Yeah.
And he took a pay cut willingly with the Jets. Like, he offered up the pay cut.
That's fair. Literally nobody's made more money than him playing football.
That's fair. I think he genuinely just wants, it sounds like he's genuinely trying to figure out whether he wants to play football.
Yeah.
And at that position especially, though, this is not one bit a character indictment of him. It's just that he might be past that point of where that's the guy that's going to come in and change the culture, fix your team, or whatever else.
Here is the other cut that I thought was interesting from this chat with Pat McAfee. This is a little long, but there was nowhere to cut into this story here about Aaron Rodgers going and flying to New York, and he points out on his dime, to sit down face-to-face with the Jets and the head coach and the GM, who he has not met and does not know, Aaron Glenn, and then Darren Mugay, the GM of the Jets. This is how that meeting went.
That was an interesting 2 years, to say the least. But, you know, I figured that when I flew across country on my own dime, that there was going to be a conversation. And the confusing thing to me, and the strange thing, was, you know, when I went out there, I meet with the coach. We start talking. He runs out of the room. I'm like, that's kind of strange. I was like, then he comes back with the GM. And I'm like, all right. So we sit down in the office. And I think we're going to have this long conversation. I've flown across the country. And 20 seconds in, he goes, I mean, literally, I'm talking to the GM about something. And he leans to the edge of his sheet and goes, so do you want to play football? And I was like, yeah, I'm interested. And he said, we're going a different direction at quarterback. And I said, and I was kind of shocked. Now, not shocked because I didn't think that was a possibility. Listen, of course, they want to move on. That's totally fine. But shocked because I just flew across country. You could have told me this on the phone. If we weren't even going to have a conversation, and this is verbatim exactly how it happened. So I said, huh? And he goes, we just want to know how you want it released, the messaging. And I said, verbatim, I don't give a shit about the message. And I said, why? And then he said, I don't want to be up in front of the room saying something and have guys looking back at you.
Interesting.
And I said, what does that even mean? Are you assuming that I would be in the back of the room during a team meeting undermining what you're saying? I said, you don't know me. And he said, you don't know me. And then I said, exactly. Which is why I flew across the country to have a face-to-face meeting with you to talk about my experience with the Jets and to hear your vision for the team. 20 seconds in. What I thought was going to be a couple-hour meeting turned into like a 15-minute meeting, and I walked out of there.
Right. But, so at that moment...
That was a strange meeting for sure.
Obviously,
there was no me pleading like, please have me on the team. No.
I don't know. I
don't want any part of that. It was already a debacle.
And then, I love the debacle at the end. Makes me laugh. And now I think he pointed that out about him not begging and pleading because it had been reported that was his demeanor in that meeting as he was begging to keep his job in New York.
Which never made any sense. I was always very skeptical of that report. Now, Aaron Judge has a history of mischaracterizing his exchanges. What did I say?
Judge. Judge.
Him too. And we'll get to him next. Aaron Rodgers has a history of mischaracterizing the way things go down with front offices. Now, he acted all put out that the Packers made a decision to move on from him without telling him. Well, he was specifically unavailable, and they tried to get a hold of him, and he blamed bad cell phone service. He was on a darkness retreat where nobody could get a hold of him, and then he blamed his bad cell phone service. So I don't 100% believe everything he says. My biggest question is, he points out multiple times about how he flew across country on his own dime, and oh, woe is me. It's not clear that the Jets... I don't even asked him to do that.
Who called the meeting? The meeting? That's what I want to know.
Or even if they called the meeting, like maybe Aaron Rodgers said, "Yeah, I'd like to meet with you. I can be out there tomorrow." And so he goes and does that on his own volition. Like, so be it. I'm not 100% sold on the Jets brought him cross country just so they could tell him he wasn't going to play. The other is when he says the head coach talking about Aaron Glenn, who I know, says he runs out of the room, gets up and runs out of the room. Listen, that is. I can tell you immediately that is a mischaracterization however Aaron Rodgers operated in that moment. Aaron Glenn does not run out of rooms. Mm-hmm. Aaron Glenn is as tough and straightforward a dude as there is. I do think that there is an element of having HR in the room when you fire somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the Jets especially where their people haven't been on the same page, I think that maybe in the brief exchange that Aaron Glenn and Aaron Rodgers had, Aaron Glenn had already made his decision based on whatever and wanted to be sure the GM was in the room when they had this discussion.
Yeah, I would love to hear the Jets side of the whole thing in that meeting, you know, what they thought. I would love to know if their mind was made up before Rodgers flew out there. I think that seems to be his biggest thing, is that why didn't you just tell me over the – if you're going to cut me, why didn't you just tell me over the phone? Was this thing about – Aaron Glenn asking him, you know, do you want to play football? Was that just a dog and pony show to, you know?
Oh, no, Aaron, you flew across the country. You know, less than a year ago, you were flying to Egypt to get away from a mandatory minicamp. You're like, oh, I didn't realize that you were so averse to travel.
If you had to guess, if we were to pose this as a, it's hard to pose as a poll because then people need to go listen to that audio or whatever, but just having listened to it now and just asking you this question, do you think there's more people out there that feel sympathetic towards Aaron Rodgers that he had to fly all the way across the country to get cut face to face and then basically fly home, it sounds like, or that they're sympathetic to him, or that they're in the corner of Aaron Glenn. They're like, good for you, Aaron Glenn. You speak for all of us when you do that to Aaron Rodgers.
No, I think 100% they side with Aaron Glenn, but the only thing is that also that people are gonna analyze it as if what Aaron Rodgers said is exactly what happened in that meeting.
Yeah.
And you're leaving out, even in 15 minutes, you can leave out a lot. And
a two-minute clip
description of what it was, right? Now, we know that Aaron Glenn and Aaron Rodgers were having a discussion before Aaron Glenn supposedly ran out of the room to go get the GM, as if he needed a savior, a help or something. That Aaron Glenn may have very well made his decision based on. Plus, Aaron Glenn saying, "Do you still want to play football?" And Aaron Rodgers saying, "I'm interested."
Yeah, like, no, well, that's
all
it.
Right, boy.
Yeah.
Boy, you sound like you're really passionate about it. I'm interested,
I thought the same thing. Yeah, I thought the same thing. All right,
that was a big thing, because remember, Aaron Rodgers had claimed that the Packers never reached out to him at all.
Yeah.
And the Packers said, oh, no, we tried to get a hold of him. And then Aaron Rodgers said, well, my cell service in Malibu isn't that great.
It is like, very mountainous in Malibu. It is very...
Right.
No,
he says it's better on Facebook or what have you.
Yeah.
Dude, come on. come on. It'd be one thing if he said, oh, yeah, you know what? They tried to get a hold of me, but I wasn't available. They said that the Packers never reached out to him. Aaron Rodgers said the Packers never reached out to him or wanted to discuss anything. He was ignoring their calls.
All right, Take-A-Mania, the bad takes of the week. We have a defending champion. That's how this works. We've got, I don't know, three or four takes here from various figures in the sports world and beyond that might take down the champion. The current champion is Stephen A. Smith. We will play the audio that made him the title holder, and then we will play the contenders. Will there be a new champion? That's coming up next.